Let's go. Energy on a Wednesday morning.
Absolutely. How are you doing, Paul?
I'm doing all right. It's definitely autumn. Or fall.
I think autumn is a beautiful word, autumn. But so I'm currently visiting my parents in Denmark, and right now, atypically for Denmark, it is beautifully sunny outside. And my parents, and I'm very envious of them, their house is practically from if you sit inside the living room and you look out from the three windows on the three different walls, it's forest everywhere. Because they have these, it's a very old house, and have these ancient trees everywhere that are hiding the civilization that's literally right beyond the trees. But from my perspective, it's like I'm in this cozy little cottage in the middle of nowhere. But in reality, the train is like 5 minutes away, right? So it's such a good location. It is so cool. And I really, really enjoy being here. And by the way, Paul, like so far, it is very quiet. But if you do hear some meowing in the background, it's not me. It is the cat. But she is currently okay. Lounging on the sofa as if she owns the place. She does own the place. But that's beyond the point.
If there is a thing to say about pets, and this is not going to become a podcast about pets. By the way, welcome to episode 20 of The Wandering Pet.
20!
With me, Paul Harris, and you...
Lydia Vasilova. I almost forgot my name. Today's topic, and I'm very excited about this because it is October. It's been now many years that October is DemoFest month. And as someone who has spoken for the last couple of years at DemoFest, like in person, I still feel, like, even though I'm not speaking this year, which is a very strange feeling to have, I am still incredibly jitterily excited about it because I'll get to see all of the folks that within the UK and actually flying from the US as well and from Europe. I'll get to see all of like my pre-sales buddies, and I'm so excited. The only thing I'm not excited, Paul, is that you are a traitor and you're not joining us this year because you actually have a job and you need to do actual job things.
I do. And I am really sad to be missing DemoFest. I actually think it's just rude, right, that this gets booked at the same time as the biggest partner event for us all year, which I am equally excited about going to because, hey, again, that is for the company. That's where are the top partners. These are the people that, you know, I'm excited to, for the same reason, I think DemoFest is great. And I am sad to be missing DemoFest. I really am. But both of those events, I think, are a great encapsulation of what we appreciate now about meeting people face to face in what is a primarily remote world, is that actually these kind of events have a lot more intrinsic value in just being a chance to kind of meet up with people and go, oh, yes, that's how tall you are, which they still are. They absolutely
yep.
still are.
Yep. That's my, you've just summarized my experience of meeting people in pre-sales, which is like, oh my goodness, you're all giants. Fantastic. It's been an exercise in neck strength for the last couple of years. But here we are. So what I wanted to do today with you, Paul, is really go back in time about a year ago, because like last year it was the 11th when DemoFest was actually happening. This year is the 8th. What we decided to do today, mostly out of need, because very naively, I thought of like, oh yeah, like all of the events that the wonderful folks are hosting at Consensus, there will be the agenda from last year's London DemoFest. It turns out it isn't. I won't reach out to anyone and ask why that was the case. but it did just cause about 15 minutes of true panic slash annoyance from my side that I just couldn't find it. And it's also poo-poo on me for not being good at documenting these things. But my excuse is, as when you are a speaker, and one of the many reasons I don't want to speak this year, when you're a speaker, the only thing you can focus on is your thing because you don't want to screw it up. You just want to go in and do a good job and hopefully people will like it. And then after your talk, you are so exhausted from that endeavor, at least I am, that I have zero capacity to really consider that I need to take documentation of a past event. But lesson learned, we will be definitely better this year around when it comes to that.
What we did do though, after some 20 minutes of frantic searching through LinkedIn, through the internet, through even the Wayback Machine, which, for those of you who are not familiar, is a site run by a non-profit called the Internet Archive, who basically make it their job to capture web pages before they die, because there's a percentage of web pages that, unlike the Space Jam official website, no longer exist. And this time it failed because we tried to find the page which said, here are all the speakers at DemoFestX London and their topics for 2023. But then we came across an idea which was a useful hashtag. And anyone who attended last year will know that there was a competition to take photos and to post about the event using the hashtag DemoFestX. Or DemoFestX, DFX London 2023. Let me get this right. DFX London 2023, because I used the wrong one several times when I was posting. That's why I didn't win as well, because I posted a lot. But I think it's really interesting, though, because what looking at that does is, and you say as a speaker, you are in speaker mode, which is totally fair. But what the hashtag and what that conversation does is it gives us an insight, as you say, almost a year on, into what people were talking about. What was the takeaways that attendees had from DemoFest? And I know I can think about the sessions that I attended and what I took away from those. First and foremost, a friend and podcast host or podcast co-host, but also what were the topics that we covered? And I think this is really interesting. So what we're going to do is just kind of go through that hashtag, have a look at what people talked about. And if you're kind of interested, then you can just go to LinkedIn, find the hashtag DFX London 2023, and you'll probably see some of these things. And I think it's just interesting to know how many of these things coming up again this year, and what things are we seeing being talked about this year that were not really even on the agenda last year.
Let's do that. And to be honest with you, just from like starting to scroll through the hashtag, the first thing I want to highlight is the fact that, and to re-emphasize what you just said about the fact that it is about getting to meet people in person. Looking through the pictures of just like the crowd pictures of like just the amount of heads in a room that are really into our profession and really into this stuff, it is so nice to like see again, because there is a certain energy in the room when you do get to an event like this, when you don't have to explain what it is that you do, when people actually get it and you just have to say like two words and they know exactly like where you are in an organization, what is your responsibilities, how do you actually sit within that role. So for folks that are still on the fence and there is still a little bit of time to actually do that, do please join us if you have the ability. And if you don't, next year, there's hopefully going to be another one if they continue making this an annual thing. Before we actually dig into the post poll, looking back at it, what was the most impactful thing that you got from that event as a attendee? You can't say me.
I can't say you. I can't. Right. So putting aside, but and I think sincerely, putting aside both the impact of your presentation first and foremost, and getting to meet you and connect with you, and now having you both a podcast co-host and as a close friend as well, and kind of partner in many things that we are now doing, the takeaway I had on the social side was it was just great to meet people. So there were people who I had met before at events that I'd attended, at some events that I'd actually run when I was involved with Presales Collective. Thing that I took away on a kind of a personable level was just kind of was that connection with people, and that, as you said, that sort of uplift of, wow, this is a room full of people who get what I do and who are passionate about what I do and who want to see this profession succeed and this profession grow. I think as an attendee, the topic that from this, and this is again the your experience of events like this, especially when there's multiple tracks, are inevitably dictated by the sessions that you attend. So for context, I knew at the time that I was going to be stepping into a leadership a people leadership position in January of this year. So I went in kind of with that mindset going, well, what are the things I need to learn about? So I remember one very good session, which was, you know, five things to know as the new pre-sales manager, right? How to go in and approach this role. I think that's kind of one practical side of it. I think the thing I took away from it, and this was from multiple sessions, was the importance of your personality and your personal brand and your own individuality in your success in this profession, and actually just how important that is to recognize that, to leverage that and take ownership of that and use it to propel yourself forward, because that's what's going to make you stand out.
Shall we go chronologically then? From both your memory, my memory, and the hashtag. And
yes,
we can't start with anything different but the keynote from the then CEO of Consensus, Geraint Hess, the man, the myth, the legend, the one that wrote buyer enablement in a book. And is continually pushing that idea through. I think first of all, he's a very engaging speaker, so he was very easy to listen to. And it was a very good setup for the day around, obviously, you know, full transparency, they were positioning something at the time that was a new feature for consensus, which, you know, let's talk about the elephant in the room, which is it is a consensus event. And over the years, like I have encouraged them as well, and I think multiple folks have, that this is still a consensus event. You should talk about yourselves a little bit more. Whilst we appreciate the effort of making a community for us, like the pre-sales professionals, to talk at, it's still a vendor event, and we want to hear more about where your direction is, because they are influential enough as a company to really move things in different directions. So it was actually, I think last year was the first time they really took that to heart. And from the get-go, from the keynote, they were talking about something at the time that was really important to them, which is this idea of a guided tour. A guided play was even the term that I had noted down here, which is practically what then turned into the feature that they later on in the day announced, which was tours, right? Which is a guided demo tour within the consensus ecosystem. But it was also really interesting to hear from Garen himself around, like, what is the value of actually doing that? Well, it's not a revolutionary idea to do a sort of hands-on demo or something that people can play by themselves, yet have the guidance of the actual vendor, the actual product owner, and to have that, because I think you and I have sort of like brushed over this topic of like, you should not just give people like a free trial and just let them at it. So we have brushed this topic around not just giving people a free demo or a free license to just go and try the product out by themselves without the guiding hand of someone either within the pre-sale space or within the product space. So it was actually a really interesting start of the day, and it really curated a lot of the conversations that people were having around this. I remember like throughout the time of the event. Obviously, you were also in that keynote. Do you have any notes that you want to add to that?
I think the main thing was that it was this first time I had really encountered the kind of context of and Garen's analogy, this idea of like of guiding you through a storm, guiding you through a dangerous place, somewhere that you don't know. And if you don't have guidance, if you don't have that navigation assistance, you're going to really struggle. That kind of resonated with me. And I've never been a fan of the like free trial for a lot of the reasons that he pointed out, which is that it's like just giving someone the keys to quite a complex piece of machinery and going, try it out. And the experience is often very poor because people don't know what they're doing. They want to get hands-on with products because that's kind of human nature, right? You want there's a subconscious belief around kind of this thing of, oh, well, if I haven't tried it, it's not going to be real. It's not going to be, it doesn't kind of work. So that makes me think, oh, okay, we need to give that guidance. So it was an interesting kind of take from that. And I think it was also a sign, the fact that, to your point, that, you know, consensus are a market leader, that they are talking about this seriously and at the time actually releasing a feature into their product, a flagship feature, which they then were, you know, really pushing. And we can see that they have doubled down on that now with the acquisition of Reach Suite. That's really telling for me. So I'm basically going, okay, this is clearly the direction that if consensus are going after it, there's momentum here because they are a company who do things that have momentum behind it.
Yeah. And we do see it as well. Like, you know, there are the space right now. And even I would say a year ago, it was us vibrant, but it's getting even there's even more products out there within the space now, and they're all sort of leaning in that direction from my experience and from what I can see in the pre-sales world. So it's really interesting that a year has passed since, and it's still, I would say, a hot topic. It is still things that people are talking about or referring to. So it was a fantastic keynote and a fantastic start of the day. My memory after the keynote is my own session. I don't know if it's an effect of the stress that I was under, or it was genuinely like the one thereafter that was like immediately after the keynote. I'll be honest with you all, I genuinely have no memories between the keynote and my session.
I think your session, if my memory serves, your session was first. So I don't have a memory of chronologically between the keynote and your session. I remember coming out and going, I'm going to do your session now. And I remember it being, so this is my chance to tell the story about your session and my perspective on it, because I think this is always quite entertaining. It was down the far end. There was the main like keynote space, and it's like a big long corridor. And then there were three rooms, I want to say. You should have been in the first one because that was the biggest. In hindsight, I remember getting down to your one. I was kind of sat on the left, kind of near the wall. Again, I couldn't visually, and I have pictures that remind me of where I was sat. But I remember being sat there, and I then remember you standing in front of everyone going, okay, oh, that's a lot of people. Okay, Can we close the door now, please? Right. No. Okay. It's now standing room only. Please close the door. And I think that is reflected. We should acknowledge that when you go down this hashtag, you get a lot of mentions on this. The word jam-packed room come up more than once. And it was genuinely a jam. And I did not see a room. And I mean this. There was not a room that was as full the rest of the day as that one was for your session. And I am aware that I'm making you very uncomfortable when I say this, but that was
you're making me so uncomfortable.
I remember coming out of that session and messaging my then boss and saying, I think I've just seen the best presentation ever.
Oh, buddy. How does one respond to this? I'll just shut up.
Well, I don't need to respond, okay? Because, and I think that, do you know what then happened? Then the fire alarm went off.
The relief I had that it was after, and the realization that that could have happened midway through my presentation was just, it sounds awful because like we didn't know at the time if it was a real problem. And and I just remember just feeling like this very counterproductive level of relief of like, oh, thank goodness it didn't happen earlier. very selfish. But well, no, thank you so much for, and you're very kind to say all of these things. I don't know what to say. I am.
You don't have to say anything. That's fine. I've said my piece. The fire alarm actually happened. It happened after the end of your session and before the start of the next one. It was a really kind fire alarm, and it wasn't a fire drill. It was genuine.
I do want to say, like, I will address something for my session, which was that is genuinely the session I am the most proud of presenting. One, I had the joy and the pleasure of having my then boss with me, and someone who hasn't actually seen me present outside of a professional setting, okay, like demoing in front of customers or anything like that. This was the first time that someone that I look up to quite a lot managed to see me in a place where I'm incredibly passionate about. And the response then I got from him is something I still cherish so much, because like immediately after the session, he came over, he gave me a hug, and he said, you are incredible at this stuff and you need to do more of it. And thereafter, by the way, like just to give you like a, because I don't know if I actually ever spoke to you about this, afterwards, I got given so many opportunities within VMware to actually do and present this session and others because of the impact I made on him. Mm-hmm. So, this was not my first DemoFest session, right? But it was the first time that he was there. The first time that anyone from VMware was there. So it was quite like it confirmed this feeling that I had of I like doing this stuff. I think I'm good at this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then seeing someone who, you know, who sees me day in and day out with my normal, you know, day-to-day job and saying like this is incredible was incredibly validating. So I'm very proud of that one. And that's why maybe even for this year I was as many of the reasons that I didn't want to present, one of the reasons was I cannot do better. This was like the top of what I can do. So there needs to be like a little bit of a break.
My highlight I'd love to know if, and actually, no, I don't want to know if this was scripted because it was too perfectly timed, was when, and forgive me for kind of, I don't remember the exact context, and it's, you were kind of talking about what you do and what your job is and that you do this and you get paid money. And you'd already told us, and this is a kind of, again, this is a bit of a kind of masterclass in storytelling in a presentation, which is you had told us that your boss was sat there. You were like, right, my boss is sat here watching me. Like you were like right at the start of that. So we knew we had that context. You then, and I have this very weird, kind of quite vivid memories of specific moments. Have you sort of said, I get paid a salary, which should go up. You sort of looked at him as you said that, and I was just there. And I think it was funny because I knew other people that who were there presenting also in front of their managers that day. And it just did this thing, if it just took the tension out of the room really quickly. Yep. And it was really well timed. And I think, again, it's one of those things where when I think about the other presentation, the fact that your forgiveness, not permission approach to the slide deck, because someone else I know who's been that day was like, how did she get away with that? Because I was told to use this one. And you were just like, yeah, I just sent it in really late, so I couldn't change it. And I think
By the way, for context, for folks that are not familiar, so there is a DemoFest slide template that obviously Consensus would like for folks that are presenting to actually use. Not on purpose, but almost every single year I present, I leave my slides until the very last millisecond that I can actually apply, if not thereafter, and I actually have to email the organizers like independently and go like, whoops, like the portal to put my presentation is closed. Is it still okay for me to present? So every time I do it so last minute that I just completely forget that I there is a template or there's something that I need to actually, you know, adhere to. I adhere to the time, which I think is the most important thing, but everything else, not really. So yes, forgiveness rather than permission. I have never been turned away. I've done it every time. So, but yes, by the way, to your point about like if the jokes about, because there were multiple jokes about my boss, they were all not scripted. It was all spur of the moment, nerves. I need to. So I think it's a very lucky quality that I have that whenever I get stressed, I start making jokes. And I think that's the part that saves me in a lot of these situations, because I was incredibly stressed throughout that entire presentation. I was, oh boy, like just the amount of, like even just thinking about it, like my blood pressure goes up. I found it incredibly stressful because again, like even the whole thing of like, you know, please close the door. That was out of desperation. I was just like, oh my goodness, all of these people are coming in expecting something fantastic. And I don't know if I can provide that to them. And then just throughout the event, like whenever there was like a little bit of a low or I wasn't feeling too great about the things I was saying, I would just insert a joke. And most of the time my boss was looking at me and I'm like, well, you're the target.
And it's interesting because a topic for another day that wish to, something that I've been exploring for a long time, is this sort of Venn diagram crossover between being in pre-sales specifically and stand-up comedy, and that presenting is a form of getting up in front of a group of people is hard, whatever context you're doing it in, and especially when you're always looking to get a reaction from them, whether that is you're looking to make them laugh, whether that is you're looking to get them to engage with what it is the message that you're conveying. There can be there's a whole other discussion set on that. But on that note, cover your session. The fire alarm. But we did come back from that fire alarm.
We did. Speaking of good speakers, Adam Freeman was the one was the session I came in immediately after the alarm. And he was incredibly good at taking all of this energy that we had in the room from, you know, being out and the alarm and everything else. And I think he was also a little bit shorter on time because of that. I don't remember like how I actually like organized it, everything, but it didn't feel rushed at all. But he's managed to sort of take this big energy that we had from going out and actually directing it into his presentation and into what he was trying to say, which it was objectively a very good presentation. So he was talking about extreme ownership. And it was like the one that I remembered listening to whilst, and by the way, I'm not being hypocritical here because it was the same with my session. We didn't say, both me and Adam, we weren't saying new things, but it was about presenting in a way that was really impactful. And his session around extreme ownership was very impactful to most, like, I spoke to a lot of folks thereafter about his session. And I think, you know, to the point about, like, if you ever are thinking about, you know, presenting in one of these events, or any event, really, don't be afraid to trudge old territory, but give it a fresh perspective. And I think also Adam did a really good job of, and it was accidental, as far as I know, of hooking his metaphor to Garen's metaphor right in the beginning about they were using like the very visual, like very typical, you know, flying a jet plane or flying a plane overall.
Yes.
And it was quite interesting to watch because it's like, oh, it feels like Adam had got to see Garen's session and then changed his, but that was not the case at all. No. But it just moved so well in your brain as someone who watched the keynote and then went into Adam's session. And apologies, like, obviously, because we don't have the schedule, we don't know who else was speaking at the same time. But I remember it was almost like such a smooth ride between the different sessions that I was a part of. It's like, yeah, of course, like, we're going to talk about this now. And by the way, on the topic of extreme ownership overall, as I said, like, it wasn't a new topic for me, or it wasn't something that I wasn't already a firm believer in. But actually hearing Adam speak about it within the context of pre-sales really, to me, confirmed this feeling that I had of like, yes, as a pre-sales person, I co-own my number. I co-own the sales target. I co-own our customers. I'm not just there as a technical resource. I am there to own every piece that I have any sort of engagement in. And for that, and then I also own the results, right? If we fail or we succeed, that is also my responsibility. And I just love that he was able to capture that in such a impactful presentation.
And I think that was I was in Adam's session as well, actually, and it resonated with me in a similar way. And I think the way that he kind of broke down this model of observing, right, what's going on, orientating yourself to that situation, deciding what you're going to do, and then acting on it was exactly what he did. he went, right, there has been a fire alarm. I now have 30 minutes, not 45. Okay, I'm going to cut the presentation down to this bit, you know, and I'm then going to deliver it. And I think it's really interesting, as you say, and it was a really great example. I could have been a masterclass, right, in how you leverage the context and the situation that you're in, and you refer to this, the things that have happened. And I think we talk about there being the elephant in the room. Actually, it's just being aware of the context and being aware of the situation that you're presenting in. When you do that, oh, all of a sudden, it becomes much more impactful how you're presenting and what you're saying, because you're then connecting much more with people. And I think that was a theme. You know, I wasn't able to, again, attend all of them. I know Alex Stewart, who I know quite well, was talking about, you know, different personas. Again, really key theme that if we're taking ownership of what we do in the sales cycle, we need to understand who those people are. And we need to understand why what we are saying and what we do is relevant to them as an individual, not just what we think the company as an entity wants to achieve.
Yeah, I didn't get the chance to actually listen to Alex. Again, that's always the curse of these events. Like, you can't listen to everyone. But I'm really happy that you get the chance to, you know, to talk to him and actually listen to that. Funny that you say about the personas, because the really, and I would say it was a little bit of an odd session out, and not in a bad way. There was a lovely lady called, and apologies if I'm butchering the name. She's Italian. Elisa Seghetti. They came in as a marketing team. And it was really interesting to hear someone who is not so embedded within pre-sales talk about a very pre-sales problem. And also, first mention of our conversation, Paul, she was the one that was talking about AI very, very strongly. Up until that point, there was sort of an air of AI, but nobody really addressed it as a topic. And that was really what drew me into it. It was like, oh, okay, first time in a consensus event, we are seeing AI, like, playing through. We're talking about AI, which, heads up for this year, very different. There's a lot more AI conversations happening this year. and by the way, also, there was a lot of more conversations talking about AI in the virtual demo fest, including my own session as well. I feel like I keep on plugging my own sessions, but I also felt the need to address it, right? Because it was one of the things that it was sort of highlighted to us as a, hey, if you talk about this, no, this is the topic that we're interested in actually hearing and having speakers like talk about, which is like, oh, okay. So the shift was very rapid. So if we're thinking October last year, and then it was make time where you have the online demo fest. So within the span of a couple of months, that topic became from one speaker in London to all of us had to address it in one way or another. Mm. There was a panel about AI within the online one. And I'll check the actual sessions for this year as well. I'm pretty sure that's also, again, so many. It's a blanket. Everyone is talking about it right now, which, and it is a really important topic. But it was really interesting to hear from someone completely different from the usual suspect within these sessions talk about pre-sales and AI before we, quote unquote, the pre-sales people, got on board with that and actually started to talk about it and feel the need to address it. And it was a very interesting talk. It was a very interesting perspective, and to the point about, oh, we should be working more closely with marketing, with, you know, the teams around the core sales/pre-sales team. And it was a really, I think, a really important talk to have in that event about someone who is not in pre-sales and is talking about a topic that suddenly became very important to us.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that is the, what's changed the most in the last 12 months? Two things, which is the continued growth and almost hyper growth of the topic that we talked about at the start with Garen's keynote, and then that Mike, the Consensus CTO, spoke about at the end when they actually launched the tools piece of the Consensus platform, and AI. And it's last year kind of felt like, oh, this thing exists. Now it's like, oh, this thing exists, and here's some actual tangible, provable ways that we can use it in our day-to-day work. And neatly ties back to taking more ownership of the processes, taking more ownership of what we're involved in. And I think that this was really interesting because, again, I wasn't able to attend Don's session. I cannot remember, if I'm quite honest, which session conflicted with it. Again, my brain is failing me, but it was a year ago. But Don's one, again, because I had seen him present on value mapping, which is an exercise which I will freely admit when I was in the field is not something I kind of did, because you went, oh, that sales job. But actually, we need to be... If Adam spoke about this thing of, you know, pre-sales getting a seat at the executive table. Well, the reality is, unless we start doing more, that seat or that role coming. Again, it's kind of a little bit, for me, it's a little bit fuzzy if there's another position to be made or if it's about pre-sales actually moving into existing positions. But whichever way you want to look at it, we have to earn the right and demonstrate the influence to get to that point in whatever shape that may be.
And by the way, Paul, and we will talk about this in a lot more details later on in time, because I already posted it on LinkedIn. So I am interviewing for a full-time role at the moment. And the requirement, or as part of that interview, I practically had to do a very similar to what Don kept on presenting and you know, as the core of the belief that he had and he was presenting and coaching people about. I had to do that. I had to map what is the value to features and functions and actual use cases that the quote-unquote people in the field had, the potential customers in the field, their managers, and the leadership within a certain organization. So I had to take a product that I was not familiar with entirely, so this new product, this company that I'm interviewing for, and actually do that mapping. And that was exactly what was the expectation of a SC coming into that company. So this is no longer something that we should potentially think about doing if we want to have a seat at the table. From my experience, this is now becoming a must-have if you're going at a higher level as an SC. It wasn't a requirement when I was going in as a field SC, just as, you know, going into VMware and just being an associate. But the role I'm having a conversation right now, this is now not enough. It is not enough to be good at demoing and good at having conversations with people. Now you need to understand the product very quickly and very quickly align it with what is the actual value to the potential customer that you're talking to. So I think that topic is actually even more important than last year as we are moving towards this. And I caught your little comment there about, you know, is it a different role? Maybe some sort of value engineering role that maybe we should talk about a different time. But within the day-to-day pre-sales role at a certain level of seniority, I think we're moving towards that being a requirement, not a nice to have.
Yeah, and value engineering deserves its own discussion, as you say. But yes, I think it is. And it's about, and the other topic as well is this coming out of this idea that there's a change, or there's a kind of a constant, there's a constant change. We aren't just sort of getting the flywheel running and then off we go. This kind of profession is constantly changing and we need to adapt to that. And it's that, I think the theme is taking ownership, being more effective and doing more, but in a more focused way, because you can expand the amount of stuff that you do, but that doesn't make you more effective. That just makes you more busy. Actually, and this is something that in the last sort of 9-10 months as a people leader, I've been emphasizing with my team, which is we need to be looking at how we can do more in the areas that we're working in, but also really focus on what those areas should be. And I think driving to value realization, to your point, is becoming ever more important in what we do. And actually demoing, showing software is becoming less important, right? It's less about going, hey, this is what we can do, and more about this is how we help you get to the goal that you want to.
And speaking of that topic, by the way, and I don't remember if you were in Rob Dean's session of the day, when is pre-sales not a pre-sales? And I loved how, and again, looking back at it now, everything like moved into each other like so well. He was talking about, and it's a very known like Rob Dean topic, which is like his 3 P's, people, process, and performance. Mm-hmm. And it's really about differentiating and like, what is the value and what are the things that we do as a pre-sales team and how do we affect it? Where do we affect it? Where do we have an impact? Where do we not have an impact? What are the actual performance metrics that we can then change, adapt to the world as we're moving along? And it was an absolutely fantastic session. I remember like watching that. I remember being in it like right at the front and just my jaw was like open the entire time because actually, it was the first time I got to hear from Rob and just how eloquently he was positioning all of these quite complex, it's 3 massive topics if you consider it. And he just managed, and he has this very good framework of actually talking to people through. And I would be really interested actually in catching up with Rob now, that ever since Adam abandoned him, to joke consensus.
If you're not aware, so Adam Freeman was formerly at the Access Group where Rob is head of pre-sales, Adam is now SVP of partnerships at Consensus, and that's happened this year.
Yep.
I'm always aware that we're speaking to a specific audience, but also there's people that listen that are not embedded in the pre-sales.
Yeah. Who are these people that they keep on referring to? I know there will be notes. There will be notes in the show notes as well for if folks also want to reach out to these people, because they're all amazing pre-sales leaders and thought leaders within the space, and we do want to obviously create even more connections. And really, that was the last sort of session that I have a very clear memory of, because thereafter, and again, this might be also the last session I watched before the closing panel, which I found myself in at the very end. And it's always interesting to be on the stage at the very end, because people are so energized and they have so many questions, so many thoughts running through their heads, and they have so many things that they want to talk about. And it was very strange and interesting to just be bombarded from the crowd by questions that are very, very thought-provoking, and you have to like sort of respond on the spot. And thank goodness I was not alone. we were a pretty big group of very eloquent speakers. And I just remember from time to time, I was just like, Lydia, you should say something on this. Like, you shouldn't just sit there and be pretty. Like, you actually should have an opinion on these things. Like, come on, brain, start thinking and stop just being open-mouthedly astonished by the people around you. Like, come on.
So I think the thing, mm-hmm. if I reflect back now on last year and what I've tried to implement since then, is a lot of stuff we talked about, working cross-functionally, but also I think really taking ownership of your own destiny. And I've long been a fan of this idea. And whenever I have a conversation with people about how I got to where I am in my career, how I've had the opportunities that I've had, I always sort of go, well, you know, I've been very lucky. And I have. And I acknowledge that I have been in a privileged position to be able to do things. But also, I've made decisions, and I've gone and I've done things like having skip-level conversations. So going and having regular monthly, quarterly conversations, not just with my first line manager, but with their manager, like going and connecting with people, going to things like DemoFest when I can, meeting people, building connections and creating those opportunities, and just kind of trying stuff, right? Going, hey, you know what? This could work. And I'm going to end on the best example of this from last year, which is that obviously I had come and spoken to you briefly after your presentation. We hadn't met before DemoFest, and I think we'd spoken like briefly on LinkedIn, and we kind of saw each other a little bit, and then obviously we were both off doing our own things. We had a bit of a conversation, and there is a fantastic picture where you look extremely bored as I'm talking. I'm clearly mansplaining.
For reference, I was not. But we will show the picture in my personal life. That photo of me became a meme that was being shared around my friends for maybe 3 months after the event, of like continually zooming in and zooming in and zooming in on my face, because it's just I don't know what I was like. The thing is, I was just careful listening to you, not really paying attention to the face I was making. But yeah, no, Jesus, that's yeah. It's been a year since we met, which is nice to think about.
It's nice. But I remember that was the moment when I can remember coming up to you and saying, I want to, I can't remember exactly what I said, but basically along the lines of like, I want to do something with you. And I think that was that moment, right? If you see the thing you want to do, this is the person you want to talk to, just go and talk to them, because everyone's human, right? And actually, yes. Who knows where it's going to take you. It's been an amazing year. And as I said, I'm gutted to not be there this year. I wish everyone the best time. I will be thinking of you. I look forward to seeing all the pictures. I will absolutely be having FOMO. And I really, really hope to be there next year, assuming that it happens. So Consensus, this is make it happen next year. Do so at a convenient date.
You need to share your calendar with them ahead of time.
I do, yeah.
And a very similar feeling for me as well. But I will be there. And for folks who are listening to this and will be there, please just look around for the bright red hair. My goal for this year will be to connect with as many folks as possible, that because of the stress of actually being a speaker, like I haven't really given the time and the headspace for people before. And I feel really guilty about that. So this year I'm going to change that, and I'm just going to be a chatterbox all day. And including, I will be there the day before. I will be there the day after. So dinners and lunches and breakfasts and whatever people can and or want to have a chat with me, please, please, please reach out and we will make it happen. Oh, and by the way, for our listeners, do keep in mind that we will talk about this year's DemoFest immediately after the event with all of my notes and all of my, like, I would practically use the opportunity to just relay everything over to Paul over the podcast. So if you won't have the ability to actually join us there, don't worry, you'll at least get my side of the story on the next episode of the Wondering Tech Podcast. AI therapy. Do you want to talk about AI?
Very quickly, because I've started something. This is the start of.
I'll just say you've started something. That sounds so scary.
It does, yeah. I've actually got an AI startup. Let me tell you about it and how it's going to make you loads of crypto.
Oh, please no.
Now I have.
You've said the two. You said the two words. Ka-ching.
The two words. Two key words. And by the way, when I get that crypto, I'm going to buy a Tesla. There you go. That's the third word.
A Cybertruck.
Yes, indeed. No, I was really struck by I don't know how recently it's been released, but a relatively new app called Social AI. And what Social AI is a sort of front end for just a bunch of chatbots, but built like Twitter was, or Blue Sky, or Threads. Those sort of short form, platforms where you put it up a bit and then people reply to you. Now, I was never that kind of popular on there to kind of get lots of people replying to me. But what you can do is you can go and you can say, these are the types of followers I want. So I want people who are curious, who are a bit skeptical, who are supportive. And you can say, I want these people to, just react to my comment. And then what you do is you literally, like, you post a message. So I posted yesterday, hang on, when I first, I've only just started playing. I put something like, I've quit social media. I've kind of unintentionally quit social media, which I have done. Again, it's not something that I've sort of done like in sort of again, intentionally, but I have done. And then I got replies and I got someone saying, is this truly quitting or just a pause? What's pushing you towards this decision? And I said, and someone said, either way, taking a break can lead to amazing new insights. What do you hope to find? Sometimes we just need a breather. What do you think you'll miss the most? And I think it's just kind of fun because all you're doing, here's a good one, is just talking to chatbots. Paul should define what quitting means. Quitting is just a euphemism for taking a break for most people. What are your reasons? And I think, and then this one, here we go, this is where it gets insightful. It sounds like an intriguing shift. What do you hope to gain? And okay, one. This is genuinely one more because this is a doozy. I haven't read all of this. Isn't it fascinating how the lines between pause and permanence blur in the digital realm? Could this moment of reflection reveal something deeper about your connection to social media? What emotions arise when you think of stepping away? So I've basically just curated a bunch of chatbots that are kind of semi-spiritual, internet people, except none of them exist. And it's
that's a very weird one. Like, as you were reading the responses written by the AI, like, I was just listening to them. It's like, it almost feels human and yet very, very artificial.
Yes,
it's very strange. How are you planning on actually using this then?
I am just using it, and it's interesting. I've listened to some interviews with the developer behind it, and some of it is like, the analogy I've heard is like, it's a bit like nicotine patches for people trying to quit smoking. It's giving you that outlet for that sort of need to go and get the dopamine hit that you would otherwise do from being on social media, but you're doing it in a completely closed off, safe space, right? You're not putting anything out on the public internet. It's a way to get that desire to just, you know, I really want to say this thing that has been trained into our brains by having social media in our lives for 20 years, but doing so in a way that you can just say and there's no consequences to it. Now, I haven't tested the guardrails on this thing. I don't intend to push it that far. I will try and see what kind of comes back. But for now, it's just kind of a bit of fun. I don't see myself using it in the long term, but we'll definitely revisit it next time, because I kind of just, I wonder if it's an example of going, hey, AI is this theory that I have that I continue to explore, which is that AI is not going to come and replace what we do now. It's going to augment it. It's going to give us an assistant. So I use Motion, right, to help plan my work schedule. That isn't replacing me having to decide what I need to work on, how long it's going to take me and when I'm going to do it. But it's giving me, it's taking away that like thinking of having to think of, oh, I have to do this. What this app is doing is just kind of scratching that part of my brain that wants to go and have conversations with strangers on the internet, but actually I don't want to do that because I don't kind of feel like I want to be in that space anymore.
Right. Yeah. So practically it's scratching the itch of having the opinions without having the relationship? Because that was the first thing. So I was thinking two things as you were explaining this. One, I thought you were going to go down the route of this is very useful for content creation because you actually get to hear people's opinions as a follow-up to whenever, like, because I think there's two ways to use social media, right? There's the social media that you consume and there's the social media you create. And I think both you and I are very much we want to do more creating, less consuming. And I think that's a really good, I'm seeing this for myself, like listening to you, I'm going to give this a go with the use case of, I want to talk about this topic. I don't want to read what other people have said already on this because then I'll get sort of sucked into it. And it gives me the opportunity to expand on a topic without the fear of being sucked into the social media circle, like cycle of, you know, new thing came in. Who's saying that? Who's saying what? That's the first use case. And the second one is, which because whilst that might be for some folks, actually being able to develop a relationship with the people you're talking to on the broader scale, especially, you know, things like Twitter, like X, like whatever, you know, is coming along now, the more like the open, because I think the way we use LinkedIn is a little bit different because it is the same people that we keep on talking to. So it's a little bit different. It's more like a closed circle of fanboys and fangirls on the pre-sale space. But if I am to post something on any other social media, it will have a much further reach because it's not as a closed loop as that is. So I just want to put my two cents out there, or, you know, put something out there that can potentially be helpful for someone, which is the reason I actually post on social media. Without that level of engagement that might suck me in. So I can see the two use cases there. One is about like expanding on the topics that you want to talk about, and two, getting a level of feedback of what's the general feeling about a topic.
I like that second one a lot, and I think it's because you can tailor it to say, look, I want you to criticize what I'm saying. And I don't know if it's ChatGPT, but it's an API into an LLM that has been, and they are GPTs that have been preset with prompt to react in a certain way. But your point about content creation is actually really interesting because it's a way to interrogate your ideas. And again, how have I used AI the most? It's with helping me to either niche down on topics or pick holes in what I think and help me explore them. But actually it's doing so in like a very just nice way that's just on my phone, that if I get a thought and I go, I wonder about this, and you just kind of do it, and then you're going to get a bunch of reactions to it that you can then scroll through that may then spur off another thought. So there we go. We've got a couple of weeks now before we record again. Let's both go and try it and talk about it next time, because I'm really interested to see what you make of it as well, as someone who has all but essentially quit social media.
Yeah. By the way, I removed Instagram. For reference,
good.
my need for bulk on Instagram has now gone away. I'm no longer ill, so I don't need the cheap, quick entertainment whenever I feel sorry for myself. But I know it's there. If I ever need it, I'll go back to the warm embrace of bulk on Instagram.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Wandering Tech Podcast. As we said at the start, this is episode 20, and we really appreciate all of you that have been here since the beginning. All those of you that have recently just joined us, it really means a lot that anyone finds this conversation even vaguely interesting. And if you do, please like, share, subscribe, and leave us a review, because that kind of stuff really does help. And it turns out it really does help with the reach to get more people to hear this. As always, you can contact either one of us on LinkedIn. We'd love to hear from you. And if there are any topics that you'd like to hear us discuss in the future, please do let us know. And if you're going to DemoFest, please look out for Lydia. She'll be wearing a very obvious shirt that will make her stand out if the med theory doesn't already.